This podcast may contain adult themes and triggering topics. Please be kind to yourself if you get triggered by what we discuss.
Also, this isn't a substitute for therapy or counseling. Please listen to the appendix at the end for some of our recommendations for resources that will help you find a qualified mental health care provider.
Now, we take you to a time in the near future where emotional abuse has been appropriately deemed a crime and the survivors find a home to reclaim their lives and freedom. This is Haven, and these are the stories of the reclaimers.
Hey.
Hi.
How's it going?
I'm fine.
Any word?
No.
Mama Vera wondered if you wanted some dinner.
Not yet. I want to give him just a little while longer.
I see. Could you maybe give him that time inside with us?
I could. But I just don't want him to think I gave up on him.
He won't think that.
He will.
You know that for sure?
I heard him think it last time we were together.
Did you tell him that you heard him think that?
Of course not. I never tell him about reading him.
Oh, okay, good.
Not like you.
Like me?
Never mind.
No. What were you going to say?
Well, you don't... No, just never mind.
Phoenix, if he's doing something...
I told you, he's fine.
We can report him if he's hurting you. Get it on the file.
Even if he was emotionally abusive, which he's not, that's not illegal. Anything I say is just going to make the judge think you've engaged in parental alienation, which is categorically untrue.
My little 50-year-old.
Minus the 40, Mama.
Who said you could have a birthday, My brilliant, beautiful, empathetic boy. Happy birthday, baby.
Thanks, Mama.
Come inside, baby, please.
I think I better stay out here.
All right. What if I wait with you? If his transport gets here, I can run inside, then he won't give you any trouble?
When?
What?
When he gets here. You said if.
Oh, Phoenix. You're right. I did say if. I'm sorry. I told you I won't give you any false hope, but I can still be supportive while you work through the difficulties you both face in your relationship. I'm here, ready to support you no matter what, okay?
I just really thought he'd come this time. He was honest when he promised.
You read him?
Mama, I'm trying to tell you what I feel. He knows I can read emotions. But I will never, ever tell him I can read thoughts. Never. Not ever. I keep my promises, Mama.
I know you do. I just want to keep you safe. The older you get, the more likely you are to... I just want to keep you safe.
Likely to what?
Phoenix, I know you're disappointed.
Don't change the subject.
Phoenix, every subject is you. You are my primary subject. I'm sorry he disappointed you.
Why doesn't he want me?
Oh, baby, I want you. I always want you. Listen, let's wait out here. I'll have Vera bring the cake out and you can blow out your candles.
What if he never shows up?
Hey, look at me. I want you to remember two things, okay?
Okay.
First, you have two parents. Whatever he does, you have me. You will never be alone. I've got you, Phoenix. You are my precious baby, the joy of my life, and I love you for you, for who you are.
Oh, I love you, Mama.
Oh, I love you too, baby. And the second...
Yes?
The hope you give your father, that's yours. You are the one who is capable of the hope. You are the source of all the hope, Phoenix. So on a day like today, where he left you alone, where he broke a promise, where he made you feel sad, you have you, your feelings, your hope.
Mama?
Yes.
I'm getting anger from you.
I feel angry with him, yes.
But you're letting me in. You let me feel the anger?
Oh, yes. I just felt a lot of it just now.
Well, you... Are you all right?
Oh, yes, of course. Now then, about that cake.
Yes.
Happy birthday, Phoenix.
Mama?
Yes.
Are you sure you're all right? You're not upset with me?
No, baby, I'm not. I love you.
I love you too, Mama.
And he never showed up.
No, not that birthday.
Not until you were 14?
Yes.
Why 14?
I was graduating from secondary school. I had the scholarship to the advanced program at Johns Hopkins, and I was starting an internship with the Baltimore Oceanic Voyager. As per his usual, it was all about the money.
What did he do for a living?
He was a therapist.
Like a doctor of...
A doctor of psychology, yes.
You wanted to be an oceanic voyager.
Yes.
What changed?
Watching Mama Jane and Mama Vera connect after all the years of suffering Mama Jane had been through.
It's okay to want to save your mother, Phoenix.
Not according to Jung.
I'll give you that. But I don't mean the actual saving, I mean the wanting to. It's okay to have good intentions about resolving family issues. And you have some of the purest intentions I've ever met.
Are you sure they're not selfish?
What is selfish, anyway?
You sound like Percy.
I wondered when we were going to address her effect on your professional role.
Why is that?
The press has been running with this profound influence her experience had on you, how it changed your career path.
Yeah. She won't let me correct them.
Why not?
So I don't have to reveal Mama Jane's story.
So Percy protects you?
Yes. Like she always has.
There's so much comfort there.
Yes. Do you think I shouldn't be thinking about that? Maybe I need to be addressing the pain instead?
No. I believe this comfort you feel with her, it's a replacement of sorts. You're replacing the old model of connection, where there was always turmoil or questions about your worthiness. This model, what? Tell me about when things are really good with Percy.
Oh, she's supportive. Yes, sometimes I think it's more than I deserve. But she never ever thinks that. She's grateful for me. She allows me to protect her. There's no expectation, no wrongness. No, that's not a good way to say it. I just feel like I don't have to investigate feelings with her. I can just be. I can fiercely defend and protect her, and I know she'll do the same for me.
She lets you protect her?
I mean, have you met her? She doesn't really need me to protect her.
What about Jane? Did Jane need you to protect her?
Yes.
What did she need you to protect her from?
Warren, my father.
What else?
I don't know that we really need to.
I think we need to. I'm going to gently challenge the pace here. And with your permission, I'd like to ask some tough questions for just a moment.
I knew this was coming.
When did you know?
That session a few weeks ago when I needed a break.
Yes. Because you said break, not I won't talk about this. And if you choose to not talk now, we don't have to.
Your logic is sound.
I got the sense from our other discussion that you felt the need to protect Jane from other things besides your father. What were those things?
Hurt. Emotion violence. Any other men that might abuse her. And? Me. She needed protection from me. I mean, that's why she had to block me, right?
Oh, Phoenix, you are such a bright, capable boy. Of course you would have tried to take that on.
Oh, and I never stopped. The trouble is, I don't know how to stop. I have been taking it on for so long.
I once asked you how you coped with knowing that Mama Jane had blocked you.
I think I might have used fantasy to an unhealthy level.
Is there an unhealthy level for the tools?
Well, for fantasy, yes. I got so wrapped up in the never-ending story.
That's the one about the little boy who saves the queen?
Empress. And yes, I never realized that the plot description so closely aligns with my desire to save my mother.
How does he save her?
Well, he gives her a new name and then rebuilds her world for her by following his own path of wishes.
Wishes?
Well, what his heart wants most of all.
And he does this all alone?
No. He has a warrior best friend and a dame.
A dame?
Well, she sort of serves as his replacement mother.
The boy misses his mother.
Well, his mother, she died of some illness. The book doesn't say which one, so he only has his father left.
You didn't have that option.
Well, I felt like I'd lost both my father and my mother. Anyway, in a poignant scene, the boy, Bastian, sees his grieving father trapped in a pane of isinglass.
And did you see your grieving mother as trapped in isinglass?
A little, yes. Like she wasn't available to me.
No wonder you identify with Bastian.
I took it to an extreme, though.
How so?
Well, at one point, when I was 12, I started believing that I lived in the House of Change.
A House of Change?
With the dame.
Ah, with the replacement parent.
Yes.
How is that taking things too far?
I'm ashamed to say that I would often forego other real-life things just to stay in my imagination.
How many real-life things did you give up?
I don't know, maybe 5 or 6.
Per week?
Total.
Phoenix, if Bastian could see what you went through when you were 12, do you think he'd offer you a room in the House of Change?
Maybe.
Who told you that it wasn't okay to stay in the fantasy?
Well, I heard Mama Jane talking to Vera about it.
They were worried?
Yeah.
So the shame you mentioned, it came from that conversation that you heard?
Maybe. There was so much going on then.
When did they start to date?
I don't know that they ever did start, just that they were always together.
Hmm. What else was going on then?
Well, I was reading a lot, getting ready to graduate. I was playing soccer and working through the advanced level classes.
Soccer was what you did for fun?
Yes. Hmm. Oh, and I loved reading. I was obsessed with biographies that year.
Tell me about the biographies. Your whole emotional field just shifted when you were talking about that.
Oh, I was focused on famous teenagers in history. Kids who were up against impossible odds.
For example?
Joan of Arc, Greta Thunberg, Sophie Scholl. Oh, I loved Sophie's words. I must have read her manifesto 100 times a week.
Is she the one that was executed by the Nazi regime during the Holocaust?
Yes. Mm. And her manifesto seemed to be about me.
You?
Well, not that my circumstances were like hers at all, just her last words.
I don't think I've ever heard them.
Life is always on the edge of death. Narrow streets lead to the same place as wide avenues, and a little candle burns itself out just like a flaming torch does. I choose my own way to burn. My name is a reference to a mythical bird that is reborn from its own ashes, and so Sophie's words impacted me to my core. Choose my own way to burn? Oh, I felt like I could pick up where her tragic story left off. I had such clarity about my purpose, how I wanted to show up in the world.
And now?
Confusion. Fog. Always the fog. I don't feel like my old self.
In my experience, when survivors experience confusion, it's because of unacknowledged pain.
Well, that's the thing. I've tried looking for my pain. It's why I'm so confrontational with my issues. I'm trying to move through the fog to my pain, but...
I see. Could we return to Sophie's words?
Sure.
What does it mean to you to choose your own way to burn?
For me, it meant that I wouldn't waste my life as a therapist. My father's profession seemed so limiting, and he seemed to waste the chances he had to connect with others. He was in a position to really help the world, and he just caused more pain wherever he went.
Was that still around the time you wanted to be an oceanographer or marine biologist?
Yes.
Mm. But as I recall, your major at Harvard was psychology, right?
Yes.
What changed? When did you actually make the switch from oceanography?
Oh, I don't remember.
Do you remember what caused you to make the change to begin with?
No. I just remember that things seemed different after that year before I graduated.
What about...
I can't remember. I feel lost again.
The fog?
Yeah. Maybe I need a break.
Your needs are honored here. We can pick up this discussion another time.
Thank you.
Next week?
Yes.
Good. Take care.
No. Knock, knock.
Nina, come on in. I was just wrapping this council report.
I have never been in your office. You have a Monet. Is it original?
Yes, a gift from a friend.
Jeanette, that's incredible. I've only ever seen real paintings in museums.
Same, until this one, but it made it through the war, and my friend wanted it hung somewhere that it could provide inspiration.
Oh, it's so beautiful. I wish I could touch it.
Be my guest. It's got a digital overlay.
Feel that? Oh, my stars.
Well, Jeanette, may I come in?
Oh, of course. Thanks for meeting here.
I thought for a minute I'd gotten the offices mixed up hearing Nina go on like that. Darling, how are you doing?
Tove, have you seen this?
I have not. Wait, is that...
Right? Can you believe it?
Now you've got her going. She loves Monet.
Oh, I do. What a beautiful start to our meeting.
Jeanette, you might be in trouble. Our dear Nini will be over here all the time now if you're not careful.
Nini?
Old nicknames die hard.
Well, they sure do, Topheritius.
Madam, I have not been addressed so informal here at the Haven.
Get used to it, Toph. Your Nini just going to sit herself right here so she can tease you and look at the Monet.
I'll thank you to stop poking fun at the cowpoke, Nini.
You too. I knew you were friends, but I didn't know there was so much history.
We dated. And I have the privilege of telling everyone that the good judge here broke my heart.
Okay, I need a story.
Hardly.
Now.
He broke mine.
Well, I'm the one that asked you to marry me.
Yes, and I'm the one who said yes.
Not just yes, yes, but...
Ooh. I did not. I said yes, and have you considered? That's a big difference there, Greenhorn.
Ooh, she's pulling out the deep South insults now.
You dated, you broke up, and now you're friends?
Oh, we were friends the whole time. Nina here is one of the best friends I've ever had. In fact, she helped me plan my wedding.
Have you met Topher's partner? She's just the most wonderful person. Huge heart.
Well, speaking of giant hearts, that big bear you married?
Yeah, he's great.
Wonderful. It's just wonderful to have this level of connection here, especially since we've got tough things to address about our co-directors.
Oh, nice transition, Doc.
Topher, you really can call me Jeanette.
Oh, I know. I just like the little bit of pride that shows through when I use your title. But if you don't like it, of course, I'll call you Jeanette.
I bet you get away with a lot using that drawl of yours, don't you?
Tell me about it.
Topher, where do you want to start? I have all three reports.
I do, too.
Well, let's start with the coalition, then.
Nina, you go ahead. Feeney only had the Luis oversight mission this last month. VC, record.
Dr. Colossi had a fairly quiet month with six missions. Her biosigns remained neutral, except for one instance during a mission to the community, where she experienced elevated heart rate and a heightened receptor attack that left her hippocampus and cerebral cortex depleted. Her amygdalic count remained high with no lapses. Reported emotions included panic, flashbacks, and an emotionally charged call with her partner following the visit. She recovered within hours of returning to the Haven the following day.
Oh, good. I was worried about that one, especially since I couldn't be with her. Home report?
Dr. Colossi has waived monitoring at her home, though her partner, Atreya, confirmed that Dr. Colossi did follow through on the care checks protocols she was assigned as part of the mission.
Good. Solid. Glad to hear it. Dr. Soleil?
Dr. Soleil continues to struggle with emotional triggers from the Luis case. He wasn't granted the request to see Luis as advocate because the coalition believed the triggers would compromise care for Luis. Dr. Soleil does continue to experience elevated heart rates and heightened visual cortex processing during and immediately after his times with their survivor Maxwell Reed Jr.
Do we need to make a change there?
I don't recommend a change at this time.
Will you state the reason why for the report?
That's in my ADVO report.
Oh, well, we'll respect privacy then, and I'll confirm that I've received both reports and that I've witnessed you both sending the reports to the coalition. Thank you both for your service. VC, end recording. Should I be worried about Dr. Soleil?
I think we should be cautious.
What's the difference between cautious and worried?
Worried makes us stop certain activities. Cautious means I'm going to observe and let things run their course.
All right. We can do that. How about your ADVO report?
Yes. Survivor Feeney continues down a path of self-blame for the abuse he suffered as a child from his father.
Concerns?
Mainly that he's having trouble tracking and remembering. It feels like we get through an issue and then the next session, or sometimes even in the same session, the ground we've covered, it's as if it's reset somehow. I've believed myself to be a competent guide for survivor progression. With any other survivor, anyway, I've relied on my skills at guiding a survivor through the later stages of recognition and acknowledgement.
But now?
We're running in circles. I don't like it, especially from someone as advanced as Feeney. He knows the curriculum. And then there's the issue of Reed. Survivor Feeney's bio signs are worrisome both directly before and immediately after each of his sessions with Reed. I don't know if it has to do with his close association with the subject matter, that Reed's presence here is because of Percy, or if it's something that's happening in session.
How long does it take for him to recover?
When I say immediately after, I mean within 10, at most 20 minutes afterwards. His bio signs have settled, and he seems to go on as before. But? The way he speaks of his experiences with Reed, there's a level of... It's not deception, and I wouldn't say it's glossing over, but there is a level of dissociative something. It causes me concern.
Take a breath, Doc. You got this. How can we support?
I don't know right now. That's why I'm recommending caution. It could just be that Feeney's experiencing a circular approach to his healing.
Has he mentioned the auricular at all?
No. Why do you ask?
Percy said his side of the auricular has been different lately.
Different how?
Percy reported seeing a desert-like appearance and heat.
Temperature? In a heightened auricular? What's the weather like in D.C. for the next month or so?
Weather controls are set to the late spring season, cool during the day with some chill at night.
So, can't be an environmental change.
I'll make a note to ask him about how things are going in there.
Please do. She was pretty reticent to discuss the change.
Any other Feeney concerns?
His night terrors.
Oh. I wonder if... those would be more of a problem as time went on. He mentioned dreams a couple of weeks back, and Percy's anxiety shot through the roof.
If I may...
Oh, by all means.
Percy's been fielding his night terrors.
Fielding how?
She's been helping him calm from them after he wakes.
That sounds like there's more...
She didn't want to tell him that she's been containing them while he sleeps.
Crossing the line of consent type of containing?
Toph, she's incapable of doing that since Kari. And then the shame of the inquiry.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I know she's Percy and not...
She's agonizingly obsessive about the line of consent. There's so much trauma surrounding that, and not even my gift can help her.
Your gift?
It's a dimension of my gift that...
She helps people with the truth.
Helps? How?
It's not just helps. Something about the way things happen when she uses her heightened empathy.
I'm able to create space for people to say the truth, to themselves and to others.
Can we put a pin in that? I have so many questions.
Of course. Back to Feeney.
Percy's containing his night terrors to what? And from what?
Apparently his terror can traverse quite the distance.
And she contains them?
Yes, to their auricular.
Could that be the reason for the change in temperature?
No clue. But the heat is recent. She's been containing things for months now. She admitted that the other day.
Admitted willingly?
I never cross the line of consent, and I never manipulate to get the truth.
Of course. I'm just so curious. I've never heard of anything like it. I'm sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
It actually took quite a bit of coaching to get Percy to talk about how she's been containing.
Why is that?
She knows I'm reporting to you, and she worries that you'll stop Feeney from going on missions. Correction, she's terrified you'll stop Feeney.
Terrified? Whatever for?
This gets into my Advil report. Is it all right if we...
Yes, please, go right ahead.
Survivor Percy is still experiencing trauma-based attachment to everyone in her life.
Is this like what we discussed last time?
Yes. She had to hide everything for so long that even her healthy attachments were formed through the trauma. The trauma layer seems to increase in size the longer she knows someone. And with Feeney, it's reached its zenith.
What makes you say that?
She feels so much shame for hiding everything from him that she's paralyzed with fear. She's worried that he's going to abandon her like all her other close relationships. Worse, this distance he's needed while he's processing his own trauma has caused her to question her value.
In their friendship?
No, in every aspect of her life. She's very nearly frenetic about not being a burden to anyone. From the tormented rumination in our sessions, I can only imagine how difficult it is to manage when she's alone.
How difficult is difficult exactly?
Pretty sure she'd walk through hellfire before she permitted anyone to know just how difficult it is to manage.
Damn.
What is it?
Anytime I meet with those two, I aim to get Percy to open up about what's going on inside, but then Feeney seems to need our attention. I feel like I've been neglecting her.
Helping Feeney is of priority to her right now. When Feeney lets her help, she feels more connected to him, and that might be just what she needs.
That's good to know. Still, I'm going to try to get her to talk more about herself a bit more. What you're describing seems like in line with what I'm getting when I'm with them both. All right. Those are my reports out of the way. Do you two want to do your action reports for the Security Council while we're here?
You go ahead, Jeanette.
No items to report, not until I'm able to determine whether or not Co-Director Soleil is capable of moving forward in a more linear fashion. I've asked the security questions, and he's answered in the negative, no incidents of consent violation. I verify that he allowed me to read him through our bond and can confirm that he was telling the truth.
Received. I've imprinted my approval.
Sent. Thank you. All right, ready for yours.
Co-Director Colossi is thriving in her return, thriving in ways I couldn't have imagined.
What makes you say that?
Returning to her role as co-director has stabilized and even propelled her internal recovery faster than any other action. I've asked the security questions and she's answered in the negative, no incidents of consent violation. I verify that she allowed me to read her through our bond and can confirm that she was telling the truth.
Received. I've imprinted my approval.
Sent. Thank you.
Wonderful. Meeting concluded.
How are you, Toph? You all right? Who's keeping track of you?
My darling, you and the good doc here keep a good eye on me here at the Haven One, and I'm lucky to have that care.
Good. Glad to hear it.
Do either of you need anything from me?
Just let me know how it goes when you do try to engage Percy next time. She's been a tough nut to crack. I'd like to see her get willingly vulnerable with someone who isn't Feeney.
I can do that. Jeanette?
I could use some San Fran chocolate.
Oh, Dr. Jeanette, I will make it my primary goal to personally bring you a case of San Franciscan chocolate in the next month.
Why, thank you, kind cowpoke.
Oh, the gratitude is all mine.
Hey, it's Percy and Feeney here. What you've just heard is a work of fiction, but we know that many listeners are living in a world of pain that isn't fictional at all.
At the end of every episode, we're going to include an appendix of sorts. Some things we hope will serve those who live with a reality of fear and pain every day.
First, we want to let you know about our website, www.empowering.tools, where we keep an ongoing list of books, websites, hotlines, and many other resources for victims and survivors of toxic relationships.
Second, we love to hear from you. If you'd like to share your story with us or let us know how the episode impacted you, we'd love for you to reach out. These are deeply emotional things, and we want to give you a chance to share. We're a small team, so an in-depth response isn't always possible, but we do read every message we receive.
Third, If you're in crisis or you need to find an immediate way out, please call 800-799-7233 for the National Domestic Abuse Hotline. If your abuser is a parent or a non-romantic relationship, there are other resources we've listed on the website that are just for you.
A reminder, emotional violence is still violence. You don't need to have bruises on your body to deserve help, and it's okay to feel what you're feeling when you call.
Fourth, be safe. For some, getting out will take planning and time. If you know you need help, do what you need in order to safely get away.
Lastly, we know how difficult it can be to believe there's hope on the other side of a toxic relationship.
Many on our team know the devastatingly difficult steps it takes to get away from an abusive predator.
But there is hope. You don't have to do it alone. If you don't have supportive family or friends, you can still find support at the hotlines we mentioned earlier or at a local hospital or shelter.
Thousands of survivors have made it out. Getting out and reclaiming your freedom can be your story.
We believe in you.
We believe in your future.
And we believe in your right to that freedom.